true. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the second part of the interview with Dr. Kevin Barrett. Dr. Barrett has a PhD in Arabist Islamology and is one of the best-known critics of the war on terror. He's a radio talk show host on truthjihadradio.blogspot.com. He's an editor on the website veteranstoday.com. He's the author of several books related to 9/11, and he's appeared on Fox News, CNN, and PBS, and has inspired articles in the New York Times op-ed, Christian Science Monitor, and the Chicago Tribune. As I mentioned on last week's show, the information you'll hear today is quite controversial and is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. This is a perspective that is rarely, if ever, heard in the corporate or even most of the alternative media. If we only hear one perspective on any issue, then our knowledge is probably somewhat limited. So hopefully what you hear today will stimulate open thought and debate. After all, isn't that the foundation of democracy, the right of freedom to express and hear all sides of an issue? So let's begin with the second and final part of the interview with Dr. Kevin Barrett.
So let's move forward to what's happening today in Syria and Iraq and the group ISIS. Who's behind them?
The usual suspects. Al-Qaeda was and remains a kind of a brand name for Islamic extremism that was created by the CIA. And to follow this whole history of Islamic extremism, let's go back to 1979. That was the year that two critically important things happened. One was that Brzezinski, who was President Carter's top foreign policy advisor, decided to bait the Russian bear into invading Afghanistan so we can, quote, give the Soviet Union its own Vietnam. And the Americans lured the Russians into Afghanistan and then pulverized the Soviet Union with that insurgency, using radical Muslims to fight the insurgency. And the word Al-Qaeda means the CIA database. That was the CIA's database of Mujahideen that were over there in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the CIA used some of these people as mercenaries subsequently to continue fighting against the Russians up until this day and to smuggle drugs for the agency. So that was one thing in 1979, the Afghan War. Second thing is the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism. That was convened by Netanyahu himself. He summoned George H.W. Bush, Henry Jackson, who was the number one military money guy in the Senate, and a number of other top-level U.S. policymakers to Jerusalem. And they sat down at the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism, or JCIT, and they sketched out a plan to make terrorism the world's next big enemy. So they finished off communism through the Afghan jihad using the CIA's database, Al-Qaeda, and then once they had finished off the Soviet Union, they brought the next enemy forward, which was the Muslims. And they used their infiltration and influence of so-called Al-Qaeda to steer that brand name into becoming a bogeyman to terrify the American people and the people of the West and to authorize this massive war on Muslims and on the religion of Islam on behalf of Zionism. So these extremist terrorist Al-Qaeda spin-offs like ISIS, the so-called Islamic State, ISIS was trained by the CIA at bases in Jordan. They're created by American tax dollars. And their job is to make Muslims look bad and to destabilize governments that Israel and their American puppets don't like, such as the governments of Syria and now Iraq, and of course Iran and Iran's allies in Lebanon as well. So they're really a sort of a Israeli foreign legion dressed up as Muslims in Ninja Turtle black matching uniforms, and this al-Baghdadi, who just declared himself caliph, the head of ISIS, is, you know, almost certainly a CIA mind control slave, or maybe an Israeli mind control slave. He's just some idiot. Nobody even knows anything about him, and he's proclaiming himself the leader of the world's 2 billion Muslims. What a joke. Every Muslim of any note has scoffed at this guy and scoffed at ISIS. Even the people who identify with Al-Qaeda say that ISIS is a CIA Zionist false flag organization. So they're killing people, they're ethnically cleansing Christians, they're murdering Shia Muslims, they're raising havoc, they're destroying the nations of Iraq and Syria on behalf of Israel, and they're doing it with American tax dollars.
The Saudis are working, the Saudi intelligence, at least my understanding is working with the U.S. and the Israelis in Syria and Iraq. Maybe you can comment on that?
Yes, that's right. Saudi intelligence is doing a lot of the legwork for the U.S. and the Israelis. Saudi intelligence under Bandar Bush, that is Prince Bandar, who's an honorary member of the Bush family, he's a whiskey-swilling supposed Muslim from the royal family. They're all a bunch of Sybarites and very, very decadent crowd. This Bandar is the top suspect in the false flag attack at Al-Ruta, Syria, where there was a chemical weapons attack last August that was supposed to be blamed on Syrian President Assad. But it was obviously carried out by the anti-Assad forces under Bandar Bush. They got caught. Obama was supposed to bomb Syria based on this alleged Assad attack on Al-Ruta, but it got exposed, and they knew they couldn't sell it as an actual attack by Assad. It was a false flag that fizzled. So the U.S. plan to bomb Syria fell apart. The Zionists panicked. This was one of the first times that AIPAC, the Zionist big lobby group here in the U.S., actually failed. They tried to pressure Congress into authorizing U.S. airstrike on Syria after this false flag chemical weapons attack, and they failed. Obama pressured Congress not to vote for that, and I think the American people clearly were not ready for another war in Syria. So here's a case where the Israeli death grip on American politics faltered for a brief instant. But, you know, the same thing is still going on, just in kind of lower gear, as these ostensibly Islamic terrorists who are almost entirely devoted to murdering their fellow Muslims and stirring up trouble in Muslim countries and destroying Muslim societies on behalf of the people who trained and funded them, that is the U.S. and Israel, they're still going at it. And it's very frustrating because the way the media is reporting this is they're completely ignoring the question of who benefits, the stories about CIA training of ISIS. But it's sort of leaking out around the edges in the alternative media and Facebook and these other social media sites.
So let's talk about Gaza for a minute. Was the recent event with the killing of the three Israeli teenagers a false flag event?
Absolutely. The head of the Israeli Mossad announced 1 week before the kidnapping that he said, what if three Israeli teenagers are kidnapped in the West Bank? So he predicted it perfectly. He got their age group, teenagers, he got the number, three, and he got the place, West Bank. Even Israeli journalists have reported that this was a false flag. The official story of this kidnapping, which is that the police supposedly got a phone call from the kidnapped teens, including with a gunshot, one of them being shot while the phone call was going on, and the police didn't react because they thought it was a prank. I'm sorry, but in a war zone, the Israeli police do not non-react like that. What a joke. So Barry Chamish, who's a very strong pro-Zionist, pro-Israel journalist, has written that this was a false flag. Roy Tov, who's a former Mossad agent and now independent journalist, has written that it was a false flag. And other Israeli journalists as well have written that this was a false flag. Netanyahu needed an excuse to pulverize Gaza and murder these hundreds, or who knows, it'll go into the thousands of people. And so he staged a public relations event like they always do. The Israelis are very, very good at these public relations events like 9/11. Like 7-7, Madrid, Bali. Every time they've been pressured to make peace, there's always been a radical attack against them. A bunch of Israelis get blown up. They're masters of these bloody public relations stunts. And so this three Israeli teenager kidnapping was another public relations stunt designed to launch the Israeli assault on Gaza and to punish the Palestinians for having a unity government. But there's an interesting aspect to this, which is the psychological manipulation of the number 18. Just like on 9/11, when the Zionists chose the date 911 to be the same as the number for the emergency telephone call to the government, which subconsciously instilled in Americans the knowledge that they were now living in a permanent state of emergency and that the government was the one source that would help them. You had to depend on the government in this new state of emergency. Likewise, the number 18 was used by the Israelis who set up this false flag murder of their own three teenagers. They counted off the days after the kidnapping. There was a hunt for these teenagers that completely dominated the media in Israel. And so they went through day number one, day number two, day number three, all the way to day number 18. And lo and behold, the bodies of the three kids were, quote-unquote, discovered on the 18th day. Well, the number 18 in Israeli Jewish culture is the number of life. And Israelis had always run around brandishing T-shirts and flags and icons with the number 18 on it as a Kabbalistic numerological symbol of life. So by having these kids discovered dead on the 18th day. This created a sort of semi-subconscious, Kabbalistic, numerological message that we, Israelis, are the people of life, number 18. They, the Palestinians, are the people of death. They've killed us. Therefore, for us to have life, they must have death. We need to kill them all. And that message was then used to launch this mass slaughter of women and children and civilians in hospitals, mosques, clinics, ambulances. You know, they're just going after all of those kinds of targets and slaughtering the people of Gaza.
Yeah, that's so very tragic. So let me ask you, does it matter from which political party our presidents come from? Because it seems like we get the same policies regardless of who's in office.
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, and I think there are some arguments on both sides. There are actual differences in opinion among the ruling elites in all societies, including the United States. And the elections that we have, which are really sham events, we don't have actual elections, and the people that we elect don't have actual power. But there's a sort of a loose correspondence between the positions of the people that we vote for and who gets elected and the factions of the ruling elite who are actually running things. So, for example, in the last election, Obama was running against Romney. Now, Obama was backed by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is a sort of an America First intellectual who is fed up with the Zionists running U.S. policy and destroying the United States by spending trillions on wars for Israel. Brzezinski thinks we should be going after the Russians and the Chinese, who are our real rivals. So he's with Obama, and General Martin Dempsey, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is another realist who's getting tired of the Zionist control over U.S. policy. He's with Obama. So there was a sort of Team Obama that was more skeptical about the really extreme hardline Zionists, and the Team Netanyahu was the extreme hardline Zionists, the people who actually want to go to war with Iran, which would be suicidal for both the U.S. and probably Israel, but they're crazy enough to want to do it. War games have been run. The only way that the U.S. and Israel could possibly win a war with Iran would be by turning it into a glass parking lot with nuclear weapons. If they don't escalate to that level, Iran wins. Even the neocons themselves, in a war game strategy exercise that was done for the Atlantic Monthly magazine 10 years ago, discovered that we can't win a war with Iran. But the Romney people want to do it. And the chief Romney backer was America's leading Jewish gangster, which means America's leading gangster, period, Sheldon Adelson. He's the equivalent of Meyer Lansky, who was the banker to the mob for much of the 20th century. And Lansky was the capo de tutte capi, the chief of all the mafia chieftains. And today, Adelson is the closest thing we have to a contemporary Meyer Lansky. They call him a Las Vegas gambling magnate, but guess what? He's got an army of hitmen. He's a mafia. He's like the Godfather. And he's got billions of dollars. And he was throwing huge piles of money at the Romney campaign into the $100 million plus level. Adelson, he's not just a mobster and a gangster, but he's also a fanatical extremist Zionist. And so he was backing Romney as the sort of extremist Zionist dark horse candidate. Now, there are rumors that election fraud was being perpetrated. We know that Bush stole the 2004 election through fraud in Ohio and elsewhere. Kerry actually won 53% of the popular vote in the country. He won a landslide victory, and it was stolen by rigged voting machines. And in 2012, we thought we were going to see something similar, but there was pushback. And so the people from the realist team apparently stopped Karl Rove's attempt to use Sheldon Adelson's money to put Romney in the White House by rigging the voting machines again. So the question is, these elections matter? Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, your vote is not being counted, so it's questionable whether your vote matters that much. But, like, if 60% of people are going out to vote one way, it's pretty hard for them to steal it for the 40% person. And so the fact that Obama won was a sort of a victory for the realist forces over the ultra-extreme Zionist forces. And Obama's been pressured to attack Iran by these lunatics ever since he's been in office. And God bless him, he's resisting the pressure. So, I mean, that's about the only thing you can say for the guy. But there are these hot issues like this that actually are disputed among the elites.
And so it does make a difference. Yeah.
So the elections are a window into these disputes among elites.
Maybe you could share your thoughts on what's happening in eastern Ukraine with the Malaysian flight being shot down, or we don't know what happened. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's obviously a problem with this shoot-down story. We're getting a ridiculous propaganda line in the media here in the West trying to blame Putin for the shoot-down. Well, if there's anybody in the world who's not going to intentionally shoot down this passenger plane, it's Putin and the Russians. The only way it would really make sense would be if the Ukrainian government in Kiev, which is a stooge of the U.S. and the Israelis, would shoot it down to try to blame it on the Russians. And they have the means to do it. They have the weapons that would have been able to shoot down that plane. And the pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine did not have such weapons. So that's one angle on it. Another angle is there's been some very interesting information about the likelihood that it was actually shot down in the air. That is, that a Ukrainian fighter jet shot it down. So that's something to look for. And there are some kind of out there rumors that may actually be worth paying attention to, or may not, but are based on some mainstream sources, including Washington Times and other mainstream papers, that said that witness reports claim that many of the bodies from this air crash were cadavers from people who had died long before the air crash. Now, what does that mean? There's one Japanese guy, I'm forgetting his name, a Japanese investigative journalist who's done work on Fukushima, who argues that there was a biowarfare strike being planned, that these cadavers were pumped full of some kind of noxious virus that was being sent over to Asia for biowarfare purposes, and that the people that shot it down did so with good intentions to prevent Holocaust-style epidemic. Now, this sounds to me like it's probably not true. It's a little too extreme. But these days, you just never really know. There's weird stuff going on in the biowarfare sector. Lots of people being killed. There was the Vaxxer vaccine case a few years ago in which the biggest European manufacturer of vaccines tried to put out a flu vaccine that would have killed many people, possibly hundreds of millions of people. They had the bird flu mixed in with their flu vaccine, live bird flu, and it's perfect setup for the bird flu to mutate and become humanly contagious. So they had this massive batch of bird flu contaminated vaccine that was being shipped out to market, and it was caught by chance. A very diligent inspector ran tests and saw that the rabbits that were getting this vaccine were all dying, so that there was a recall. But it looks as though somebody at Baxter was trying to kill large numbers of people, possibly even start a global epidemic that could kill off a significant fraction of the planet's population. And we know that there are people in the global elite who are dedicated to knocking the population way, way down. People who say that a billion or even half a billion is the proper population for the planet. We're now at 7 billion, so that's an awful lot of people that they're dreaming of killing. So when I see these stories, like the story of corpses full of pathogens found in Ukraine, I would say, you know, 99% chance it's not true, but it's not impossible.
Kevin, I'm curious, how do you deal with the label anti-Semitic with what you talk about? I'm sure you hear that from time to time.
Well, it's funny because I was always very careful about that issue when I started doing 9/11 truth research and activism. And what I found was that as soon as you try to talk about 9/11 truth, they start calling you an anti-Semite anyway. And that sort of clues you in as to who it is who's trying to cover up 9/11. And the more I got into this, the more it was so obvious. It's completely the Zionists who are doing it. I mean, if you make a list of the big names in the alternative media, and you put the Jewish names on one side and the non-Jewish names on the other, it matches up pretty close to the Jewish names are all actively covering up 9/11. Many of them are fanatically anti-9/11 truth, psychotically anti-9/11 truth, like Chomsky. You know, Chomsky is... He says that even if we prove controlled demolition, that just shows that bin Laden did it. Now, this is insane. I mean, this man is supposedly a genius, and yet on this particular issue, he speaks like a retarded person. Why? Well, guess what? You line up the Jewish names and the non-Jewish names, and this is what you see. This doesn't mean that Jewish people are bad. I think most of these alternative media lefty Jewish people are terrified. I think they're terrified that if the truth of 9/11 gets out, there will be pogroms, maybe even another Holocaust. And I don't blame them for being afraid, but I do blame them to a certain extent, because the truth is ultimately the only way to go with something like this. The more you try to cover it up, the more pressure builds up in the pressure cooker, and the worse is going to be the explosion. So I just try to be straightforward about telling the truth, and I think it's very important not to use language that implicitly blames Jews in general or all Jews for the deeds of a tiny, tiny minority of Jewish people. But I do think that it's completely legitimate to discuss the parts of Jewish culture that might be contributing to some of this pathology. Gilad Atzmon, who's a Jewish-born, Israeli-born jazz saxophonist and philosopher, has written brilliant stuff on this. But even if you go that route and critique Jewish culture and say there's this tribal quality and this defensiveness, this blame the other guy and claim to be the eternal victim when you're the one who's actually doing your share of the victimizing, you know, this sort of stuff, yeah, that's all true, but it's not really that relevant because it's such a tiny percentage of the Jewish population that's causing this trouble. The average Jew is just like the average American. Both of them are just poor brainwashed schmucks, and they brainwashed in slightly different ways. And I've tried to reach out to Jewish people, too, especially when I first started doing 9/11 truth activism. I was beating down the doors of synagogues trying to find, you know, rabbis and Jewish leaders willing to go down the path of 9/11 truth, and very, very, very few would. There's so much extreme hostility from so many of these people. But there are a few noble exceptions. Rabbi Michael Lerner, who, he's pro-Zionist, he's proud his kid served in the IDF, and that's horrifying to me. To me, that's like being proud your kid was a Nazi stormtrooper, but he and I would disagree on that. But he's a good person at heart, and he contributed to our book 9/11 and American Empire with a brilliant essay saying, what if we find out that 9/11 really was an inside job? Or what if we prove it was an inside job? What then? A brilliant piece, and he took all kinds of heat from his community for doing this. And then there are others as well. Alan Zabrowski is Jewish. He's the military analyst who came out with a very strong statement that he and all of his friends at the U.S. Army War College, where he was a senior strategist, they all know that it was the Israelis that did it. There are a lot of very brave Jewish people, just like there are brave Americans, breaking through the taboos and speaking the truth about these things. And there are more and more brave Jewish people speaking the truth about Palestine. Even if they don't get 9/11, they don't get quite how bad all of this really is. They do see the massacre in Gaza, and they stand up against it. And, you know, God bless the thousands and thousands of brave Jewish people around the world who are bucking their tribal leaders and taking a lot of heat for standing up for truth and justice.
Yeah, and just getting back to actually the article I read about the 28 redacted pages to the congressional inquiry to 9/11, it seems like when anyone talks about that and some congressmen, it seems like they point their finger at that these 28 redacted pages are going to reveal a Saudi connection to 9/11. You've kind of explained that and made that clear, but I wondered, is there anything else you want to say about that?
Well, yeah, we should push to get those revealed. Of course, we'll only know what's in there when it gets revealed, but yeah, Bush classified these pages of the joint congressional inquiry, and there's something that's too hot to handle. Why is Bush covering up evidence about who really was behind 9/11? That's unacceptable.
All right, and why would Obama go along with that also?
Right, and of course, we know what the answer is. The answer is that the truth about 9/11 is so destabilizing that it would risk catastrophically, you know, shaking American society to its foundations, destroying Americans' faith in their leadership, which is already pretty much gone, but this would be even worse. And who knows, the top level of the American elite might even get lynched. Nobody wants that to happen. So, of course, Obama and all these other people who have something to lose are closing ranks to try to cover it up.
Do you think that it would stop all the wars in the Middle East?
Absolutely. It would bring down the U.S. empire and stop all the wars in the Middle East and lead to much more peaceful multilateral world. The people behind 9/11 are fanatical Nazis, basically. Call them Zio-Nazis. The fact that they're Jewish hasn't stopped them from becoming Nazis. They believe that might makes right. They believe in deceiving the people, telling the people noble lies, they call them. And they believe in perpetual warfare. They believe that war is a nobler pursuit than peace. And they are dedicated to taking over the world and creating the first ever one-world government. So we need to take these people out. And the best way to take them out is through 9/11 truth. They'll be very lucky if they just end up spending their lives in prison once this is fully and publicly revealed. At worst, they're going to be swinging from ropes. And getting rid of that cancer on our body politic would be the best thing that ever happened to the world. It would remove a tumor of psychopathic leadership that is leading the world down the road to World War III. And I don't see any other way to do it. I think the truth about 9/11 still has the potential to utterly undo the damage that's been done since 9/11, and much more than that, to go far beyond that and push the world towards peace. It could turn the United States, which has about three-quarters of the world's military power, into a peace-loving nation, and we could become a moral example to the world again instead of the world's biggest bully. Israel could be forced to end its apartheid, Nazi-style, genocidal Jewish superiority state and become a country for all its people, Jewish, Arab, Muslim, Christian, atheist, what have you. Everybody in Palestine ought to be an equal citizen. That country needs an equal protection clause, and that's what will happen if the truth about 9/11 is revealed. So we'll end up with a huge step towards world peace if we can get this through.
In light of what you just said, what are your thoughts on the anti-war movement and their efforts to end the wars, but their refusal to look at or include 9/11 in their work?
Well, they're shooting themselves in the foot, because what they're not recognizing is that people are motivated unconsciously. That's been known by psychologists now for almost a century, that our real thinking is done at the unconscious level. And 9/11 was an act of mind control that went directly to the unconscious mind and brainwashed people to support wars, especially wars against Arabs and Muslims, and to obey authority. So if you want to stop wars, you have to go to the root of the problem, which is this unconscious mind control that is operating very powerfully on at least one-third of the population and operating subliminally and to a lesser extent on the rest of the population. You can argue till you're blue in the face rationally. You can talk about all the things that these anti-war people talk about, and it'll get you exactly nowhere, because you're talking to an entire population that has been mind-controlled at the subconscious level. There's a technology of mind control called coercion that was employed on 9/11. These television images gave more than half of the American population clinical post-traumatic stress disorder, and this trauma-based mind control implanted subconscious images that are controlling the consciousness of the American people. So it's utterly useless to even work for peace in any way, shape, or form if you're not going after 9/11 truth.
I agree with you on that. Kevin, we're almost out of time. Is there anything else you want to share with the listeners before we pause?
Well, I'm sure if they haven't heard this sort of thing before, their heads are probably reeling. And I'll get into it little by little if you need to, but it's fascinating stuff, and this is an opportunity to make a contribution to creating a better world. It's unprecedented. Never before in history have ordinary common people had the kind of chance that they have today to make a better world, simply by plugging in and figuring out what's really going on and then spreading the word. So check out sources of information that are going to be telling more truth about these things than the mainstream. Check out veteranstoday.com. Check out PressTV.com. I work for both of those places, Veterans Today and Press TV. WhatReallyHappened.com is a great website. And check out the alternative media sites. Figure out what's going on. Spread it around. At least share it on your Facebook page. Tell your family and friends, and you'll be doing your part to stop these psychopaths and to try to create a livable world.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it, too.
And again, that was an interview with Dr. Kevin Barrett. He's not the first person to express the views that you heard today. If you'd like to research some of them further, here are a few books that I could suggest. The Israeli Lobby by Mersheimer and Walt. The Power of Israel in the United States by James Petras. Against Our Better Judgment by Allison Weir. Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World by Christopher Bolin. Made in Israel by Victor Thorne. And then here's a couple of websites. IfAmericansKnew.com, Kevin Barrett's TruthJihadRadio.blogspot.com. And for more information on the geopolitics that shape our world, I recommend the website globalresearch.ca and thecorbettreport.com. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.